This is the radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Acts. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Acts, chapter 27, with today's study.
Hey, snorkeling and smorgasbords, deck chairs and dance floors, swimming pools and shopping sprees. A cruise is supposed to be great fun. In 2008, a record 16.8 million people took their vacation on a cruise ship. You know, the old cliche, cruises are for the overfed and the almost dead, is apparently no longer true. Lots of people these days seem to be cruising. And one of the most popular destinations is the Mediterranean. A Mediterranean cruise sounds particularly glamorous, does it not? And yet after tonight's study, you might have a different opinion. For the Apostle Paul, he set sail on a Mediterranean cruise that was more of a bruise. Passengers were singing the blues on this particular cruise. You know, at the outset of Paul's ministry, God told him that he would preach to Gentiles and kings. And the Emperor Nero was both. It was inevitable that Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, would witness to Nero, ruler of the Gentiles. But how do you manage a meeting between a little guy like Paul and the head honcho in Rome? Paul was unable to even afford passage from Caesarea to Rome. But once again, God's providence worked to accomplish God's purposes. When Paul got tired of being a political football, getting kicked back and forth between the Jews in Jerusalem and the Romans in Caesarea, he appealed his case to the Caesar. As a Roman citizen, Paul had the right, and as a Roman governor, Festus foot the bill, and in Acts chapter 27, Paul embarks on an all-expenses-paid trip, a Mediterranean cruise, courtesy of the Roman treasury. Verse 1, "And when it was decided that we should set sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment." Augustus was the name given to the emperor himself. Thus, the Augustan regiment may have been a battalion assigned specifically to the royal household. If so, Paul was escorted by Caesar's secret service on his trip to Rome. And so entering a ship of Adramamidium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia, which today would be southern Turkey. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. And notice how Luke puts it, "we put to sea." Notice it was not just Paul making this voyage, but Aristarchus also traveled with Paul, as did Luke. Luke writes, "we put to sea." Now, it was not uncommon for Paul to travel with a number of his friends. The Apostle Paul was a people person. It's been said, Paul had a genius for friendship. No man in the New Testament made fiercer enemies, but few men had better friends. Would you listen carefully? Two porcupine friends named Willie and Bill were talking one day of porcupine eels. Said Willie to Bill, with a sorrowful moan, "Isn't it sad that we live all alone? The animals, they shun us. I have not a friend. Please tell me, Bill, oh, what is my sin?" "Don't sweat it, my friend," said Porcupine Bill. "It isn't your sin. It's just your sharp quills." "We live all alone. That's just how it goes, because no one wants quills in the end of their nose." "I've got it," said Willie. "The answer I know, I'd rather have friends, so my quills have to go." But Bill exclaimed, "It doesn't make sense. Without your sharp quills, you'll have no defense." Willie thought and he thought, but he couldn't decide, should he give up his quills or save his own hide? And then in a flash, he decided with glee, "I'll pull out my quills in the trunk of that tree." With all of his might, he ran at the trunk and into the bark when his quills, with a thunk, his quills all came out in the trunk of that tree, and Willie exclaimed, "At last I am free." free to be eaten, said Bill in disgust. You'll find out real soon there's none you can trust. But Willie said firmly, I must leave my cage. I'd rather risk friendship than die of old age. Far into the night, they debated this matter. Live safely alone or make someone fatter? The porcupine question remains to this day. Is it outreach or safety? Which one do you say? Everybody will lose one or the other, their quills or their friends. You can't keep both. If you want friends, you've got to drop your guard. You've got to lose your quills. And you've got to risk being known. And you've got to take a chance and invite a friend into your life. Reach out to God's people. Lose your quills, and God will guide you into some good fellowship. That's what we learn from Paul. In verse 3, the voyage continues. And the next day, we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. And once again, notice what Paul's doing. He's hanging out with his friends. I've heard it said, Paul was both a great soul winner and a great friend maker. If you're going off to college, first thing you need to do is find you some good Christian friends. Your first day of high school, you need to find some good Christian friends. When you're in that neighborhood, first thing to do is to seek out some good Christian friends. We all need fellowship. Paul sought friends when he landed in Sidon. And notice Sergeant Julius, how he trusted Paul. Apparently, he wasn't worried that he would escape. He recognized that Paul was a man of his word, and so he let him go in fellowship with his friends. Verse 4. When he had put out to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. Now the ship's navigator used the island of Cyprus to block the westerly winds. They swung around and they ended up docking in the port city of Myra. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy. Again, they were headed to Rome, and so here they make a change. They find a cargo ship that was carrying wheat from Egypt to Rome, a ship from Alexandria, and he put us on board. And when we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus. Now the wind had caused choppy seas and slow sailing. They sailed slowly, Luke tells us. In smooth waters, the 130 miles from Myra to Cnidus could have been covered in a few short days. Instead, under these extreme conditions, it took many days. Verse 8 continues, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. Now look at a map, and Italy was due west of Cnidus. But the headwinds were so strong that the captain sailed southwest, crossed wind to the island of Crete. They landed in a little village called Fair Havens on the southern coast of the island. Now when much time had been spent, and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over. Notice this. After mid-September, sailing in that portion of the Mediterranean had become dangerous. After mid-November, it was impossible. The fast that Luke here refers to was Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement. That means that it's currently mid to late October. Dangerous, but not impossible. Now, Paul advised them, saying, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives. They should have listened to Paul. Paul warns them of the dangers. Now, Paul wasn't a sailor by trade, but understand, he was a seasoned traveler. Think of all the places that Paul went. Think of the various voyages that he took. This wasn't his first cruise. In fact, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, when he lists his trials, the trials that he's endured, this is what he tells us. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. This guy has some experience. He has shared many a nautical nightmare. And Paul has has no desire to spend another night in the water as shark bait. He warns them, this is a mistake. Sergeant Julius should have listened to Paul, but in verse 11, nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. Once again, siding with the experts gets a person in trouble. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there. Now, it wasn't just the harbor. The sailors didn't want to be stuck in Fair Havens for the winter because Fair Havens was a little hamlet. It was a village. There was nothing to do in Fair Havens. They wanted to go to Phoenix. There was stuff to do in Phoenix. The NBA's in Phoenix. They could go to a Suns game, for that matter. Phoenix had some nightlife now. They had some bars and revelry and women. Notice, lust tainted their logic. They've stopped thinking rationally now. The crew members take a vote, and the majority says, sail to Phoenix. Hey, always be leery of the majority. God's will often conflict with majority opinion. At times, following God requires us to go against the grain. Verse 13, when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. Notice the wording, the south wind blew softly. Notice at first, this was an easy path. It looked like an easy voyage. But the easy path isn't always God's path. Remember that. So often we think just because the door's open, just because circumstances are favorable or convenient, that God must be in it. Not necessarily. Here the crew gets duped. Reminds me of Proverbs 14, verse 12. There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Hey, be careful that you don't get duped by the easy way. Notice here the four ways that we can miss out on God's will. Notice here four ways that we can miss out on God's will. First, get impatient. Get impatient. We've got to get to Phoenix. Let's push it now. Oh, yes, it might be a little dangerous. Oh, yeah, Paul's warning us. But, hey, we can do this. Let's push it. That can get you out of God's will. Second, take a vote. Side with the majority instead of seek the Lord. That can get you in trouble. Third, test the winds. Let the circumstances dictate your decisions rather than principles and convictions and Scripture. Look for the easy way, the path of least resistance. And then fourth, let your lust take over. You know, the sailors wanted to make Phoenix for all the wrong reasons. Their glands got in the way of God's guidance. Four ways to miss God's will. Get impatient, take a vote, test the winds, and let your lust take over. In contrast, if you want to walk in the center of God's will, be patient and learn to wait. Rely on God's wisdom, even when it's unpopular with your friends. Base your decisions on conviction, not convenience, and walk in the Spirit. Rely on God to satisfy your needs. Well, notice verse 14. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called a Euroclydon. And we get our word typhoon from the Greek word translated here tempestuous. A typhoon was stirred up in the sea. The sailors named these winds after the direction of their origin. Euroclydon means the northeasterner. A sudden storm arose, a typhoon. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. Now, Phoenix was 45 miles up the coast of Crete from Fair Havens. But suddenly the winds shift, and these soft southern winds turn into violent northeasterlies. Huge swells were suddenly slamming into the wooden hull of the boat. If they fought the storm, if they tried to hold their course, the boat would break apart under the stress. The sailor's only option was to sail with the wind, stop resisting, and just try to ride out the storm. Verse 16, and running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. Up until this point, they had been dragging their lifeboat. Now all of a sudden, rather than lose the dinghy, they try to tie it to the main ship. And when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. As the waves were slapping against the side of the ship, they could hear the timbers start to creak and even crack. And so they strung ropes under the hull in hopes of stabilizing the frame and keeping the ship from breaking apart. They're taking desperate measures. This storm is severe. And then we're told, in fearing lest they should run aground on the Sirte sands, they struck sail and so were driven. Finally, they just gave up. The more they fought the northeastern winds, the further south they were pushed. And the sailors feared. What Luke says here, he calls them the Sirte sands. These were quicksands off the coast of North Africa. The area was nicknamed the ship's graveyard. And so to avoid the dangers, the seamen, they lowered their sails and they just drifted. This made them completely vulnerable. Verse 18. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. I mean, the more weight the ship carried, the more momentum in the wrong direction. And so they started ditching cargo to lighten the load. Now, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. Now remember, this was before the day of electronic navigational devices. The ancient mariners, they plotted their course by looking at the stars. But it had been weeks since they'd even had a break in the clouds. There was no clue as to where they were or how far they drifted off course. These salty seamen, they were terrified. Their desperation now gives way to despair. The experts on board have given up. Everyone had given up, in fact, except Paul. Verse 21. But after long abstinence from food, you remember they were at sea 2 weeks. They thought the trip was going to take less than a day, so they weren't prepared. They didn't have the food they needed. Then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss." Now, how do you like this guy? He jumps up on deck and he says, "Hey, I told you so." They probably would have thrown him overboard if it was not for what he said next. "And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship." How do you know that, Paul? "For there stood by me this night an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I serve." And I love that terminology. Notice, an angel of God, the God to whom I belong. Can you say that tonight? I hope you can. Hey, know to whom you belong, and it's less likely you'll become someone else's pawn. People won't push you around when you know to whom you belong. And the angel appeared to Paul saying, "Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you." Apparently, Paul had prayed. He had asked God to save the passengers and the crew. Then he concludes, "Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island." In a crisis, real leadership rises to the surface. Everyone had given up hope except Paul. Rather than give up, he steps up. He says, "Take heart, for I believe God." You know, it's easy to believe God in a nice setting like this tonight, in a home or in a sanctuary. It's easy to believe God there. But it's in the midst of the crisis. It's in the midst of the storm, when your boat's about to break apart, when you haven't seen the sky for days, then can you say, "For I believe God"? Can you take heart even in the midst of the storm? Do you believe God's promise even in the midst of the storm? Verse 27, "Now when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea." You know, today the Adriatic technically is between Italy and Eastern Europe, but in Paul's day, it referred to the whole eastern half of the Mediterranean. They'd spent 14 days. And about midnight, the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. It could be that they heard the breakers now slapping on the rocks, slapping on the shoreline, so they realized they were coming close to land. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. When they'd gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. The Greek word here translated soundings means to heave the lead. That's what the word literally means, to heave the lead. They were dropping these lead anchors and they were timing them to see how long it took to hit the bottom. They could tell that the water was getting shallower. A fathom is about 6 feet, so their first measurement was 120 feet. Their second measurement was 90 feet. Obviously, they're getting closer to the shore, and they're getting there quickly. Verse 29, then fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. Remember, it's still dark. Hey, this is terrifying. It's pitch black. No one can see. They know they're getting close to shore. I mean, it's like driving with no headlights. You know you're going to crash, but you just don't know when. And so they drop off 4 anchors off the stern of the ship, and they pray for sunrise. Verse 30. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff, remember that skiff that they had tied onto the back of the ship? They were going to let it down under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow. Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Note, you had to stay put to be saved. Jump ship in an attempt to save yourself and you drown. And it's just like our salvation. We have to remain in Christ to be saved. Salvation is in Christ. We have to stay put. We have to abide in the vine. We have to continue in our faith. Jump ship, fail to abide, launch out on your own, and you'll drown. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from your head of any of you. Now, the crew members, they were about to burn some calories. You ever been out in some rough water? It can be taxing. They have received the Lord's promise. Now they need to eat some protein. And so Paul encourages them to take food. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. When he had broken it, he began to eat. And then they were all encouraged and also took food for themselves. And notice by now, the crew has a new captain. Notice this. Prisoner Paul has now become Captain Paul. He's the one giving the orders. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship, quite a crew. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. I mean, they knew they were in for a rough landing, so they throw over their cargo. And when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. The plan was to just pick up a head of steam and just aim for the beach and try to just run the ship right up onto the beach. That's not what happened. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. They started to make their mad dash, meanwhile losing the rudder ropes, and they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for the shore. But striking a place where the two seas met, in other words, they hit a sandbar. They ran the ship aground. They got stuck on the sandbar. And the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. The front of the ship stuck into the sandbar. It left the rear of the ship exposed. And so the waves just beat against the stern and the ship started disintegrating from the back to the front. This was a tough voyage.
So much of what we understand about the church today is taken from examples we find in the book of Acts. The church went through many changes. God began to shape and make his body into what he wanted in the first century, following his death and resurrection. Each day, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through the book of Acts. We'll learn God's ways for his church. This has been another edition of Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, we are sure that today's message in Acts has blessed and encouraged you in your walk with Jesus. Maybe you'd like to review this message again, or perhaps a family member or friend has come to mind today. Log on to sandyadams.org and click on the radio program option in the main menu. There you'll find today's message. All you need to do is remember today's date, or you can give us a call here at the church. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Someone is standing by to take your order. Again, just mention today's date and we'll send you the full-length CD. Next time, Pastor Sandy will continue to take us verse by verse through the book of Acts. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, we want to say thank you for tuning in and may God bless you.